jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
Come on, come on! Get that set.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday morning at the same time. We're coming to you live from the world-famous Vince Chili Bowl on H Street Northeast. We come to you the first Tuesday of each month with different topics dealing with the criminal injustice system. And this morning, we'll be talking to a young man named Abel Nunez from Cashin, D.C., about the impact ICE has been having in Washington, D.C. on the migrant and immigrant communities. But we'll get to him right in a minute. First, we open up with what we call the grapevine. Excuse me. Information you can use. The grapevine. Oh! Can you turn it up, Mike? Hello. Okay. All righty. That's the grapevine. Here we go. Trump's immigration forces deploy less lethal weapons in dangerous ways, skirting rules and maiming protesters. Since President Donald Trump's administration launched high-intensity immigration sweeps this year, federal agents have routinely countered protesters using crowd control weapons, rubber bullets, flashbang grenades, tear gas, and pepper balls. They have fired on American citizens and non-citizens alike in ways that some experts say might be criminal. The so-called less lethal weapons are designed to break up mobs and engage in dangerous behavior or deter would-be assailants who pose a threat. They aren't intended to kill, but research has shown the weapons can cause devastating injuries or death. Federal guidelines generally prohibit agents from targeting the head, neck, and throat, or spine when firing projectiles like rubber bullets or pepper balls. Oh, this is something. A backlash is brewing against companies helping ICE. There's a big swell going all over the country in regards to big box retailers supporting ICE's aggressive tactics. Companies that have collaborated with immigration enforcement agents various ways to aid Trump's mass deportation initiative, whether they'll allow ICE to raid their parking lots, taking on contracts with DHS, or other actions are starting to feel the rumblings of a consumer revolt. Home Depot is possibly the most visible case after the company's parking lot became a familiar setting for shocking viral clips and local news segments depicting federal agents' aggressive attempts to apprehend unsuspecting laborers. The home improvement chain now faces the prospect of a national boycott. But that's not the end of their troubles. Bold and unpredictable are beginning to disrupt retail operations across the country. Experts warn of global crisis as number of women in prison nears 1 million. Number of women incarcerated around the world rising at nearly three times the rate of men, with female prisoners often subjected to sexual violence and forced labor. Up to 1 million women worldwide are facing sexual violence and forced labor in prisons, where they are overlooked and forgotten in what is being called a growing global crisis. The number of incarcerated women is rising much faster than men and is expected to surpass 1 million on current trends. While on average, women account for between 2 and 9% of the national prison population, since 2000, the number of imprisoned women has grown by 57% compared with a 22% increase in the men's prison population. We are facing a global crisis. If you look at the rate of growth compared to men in prison, it is really alarming. Women are often an afterthought, and they face very harsh, difficult conditions where their needs for hygiene and sanitary items are unmet in most cases. And that's been it. That's been what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use, the grapevine. Thank you. Our guest this morning is Abel Nunez of CashSend. We're talking about the impact of ICE has been having on the immigrant and migrant community in Washington, D.C. And we called the gentleman in to give us some background on what's going on. Good morning, Abel. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on your show.
Huh?
Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining us. We've been seeing this go all on TV, play out all across the city. We've been going up to Columbia Heights and all the communities where there's a large Latino population. And we've seen some things that we didn't like. So we asked a couple of friends to see if you can find somebody, and they found you to come in. What impact is this ICE immigration, migration, whatever you want to call it, is having on the Hispanic community in Washington, D.C.?
Well, thank you for having me. First, let me just say that, you know, our immigration system prior to Trump coming on was broken. It wasn't meeting the needs of our nation. It wasn't meeting the needs of the people that are coming to this nation. And so that disarray gave Trump the ability to villainize immigrants, to make them the boogeyman, to make them the thing that was making this country worse, when that is not the case. Immigrants are a blessing to any nation in which they go. They strengthen the economy, particularly the U.S. But we also have to think about this particular point, that in 2040, the demographics of the U.S. will change. For the first time in the U.S., the dominant culture, meaning people, white Americans from European descent, will no longer be the majority. They will be a minority. And this country will become a majority-minority country. And I think that creates a lot of fear in people. And so Trump took advantage of that. And when he started his campaign, he vilified immigrants. He said that they were rapists, that they were criminals, that they only did bad things for us, and that we needed to kick them out. Unfortunately, we can't do that. There are over 12 million undocumented immigrants here, most of them working hard, making sure that our economies continue to be strong. And so what we see now with Trump is trying to flood particularly municipalities, cities that are Democratic, to create this fear. And so he has taken all the blocks outside of ICE so that they can do what they need to do to arrest. They have the courts on their side, because the Supreme Court has basically held that they can profile. They can look at anybody that's either brown, speaks with an accent, or is in a particular part of town, and go after them. That is why you've seen them in Columbia Heights. That is why you see them in Langley Park in Maryland, areas where immigrants tend to be. Unfortunately, the fact that you don't speak English, the fact that you may speak with an accent, does not mean that you're undocumented. It just means that you don't speak the language well. And so there's a high level of profiling that we're seeing. There's a high level of violence and really rough tactics that they're using. But all of these tactics are meant to send a signal, a public signal, that the U.S. no longer welcomes immigrants, right? They have decimated the asylum program. They have stopped refugees from coming in. And now they are trying to use the videos that we see, the, you know, all their tactics in full glory, so that people feel the pressure and they self-deport. So what that's causing in our community is an incredible amount of fear, a fear that people are not going to work. They're not sending their kids to school. They're not going shopping. And so it's really critical at this point to understand what's happening. Can you hear me, Roach?
Let's call in. Call in.
inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
On Monday, December 8th, WPFW presents Saving Our Homes, the Crisis in Housing and Homeownership, in partnership with the Washington Informer and the Missionary Baptist Minister Conference of the DMV. From 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., we confront gentrification, predatory buyers, tax sales, foreclosure traps, and the loss of family homes, defending our elders and keeping generational wealth in our families. The programming continues at 5 p.m., where we'll unpack the lack of affordable housing and the displacement of renters. We culminate in a town hall from 6 to 8 p.m., moderated by Donald Temple and Denise Rolock Barnes, where we welcome listeners' calls. Guests include lawyers, activists, pastors, financial strategists, and government officials. That's Saving Our Homes, the Crisis in Housing and Home Ownership, December 8th on WPFW, building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, Mike, because we're having a little audio problem.
Abel, can you hear Roach right
Wayno
now?
Wayno Festival's coming to Washington, D.C. with jams, competitions, and classes. December 13th through the 16th. Whether you're into hip-hop, house, breaking, popping, or locking, we've got you covered with top-notch Small Fries Edition, all-styles dance jam and competition for youth ages 17 and under on the 13th at Edgewood Arts Center. Freshest of all time, 2-verse-2 breaking battle, ages 18 and up, also on the 13th at the Black Cat. The world-famous Juice Debut 2-verse-2 competition, D.C. prelims, on the 14th at The Reach. And masterclasses with International Juice Debut judges on the 15th and 16th. All in Washington, D.C., all family friendly, December 13th through 16th. Additional event and registration information at wblinc.org/the way you move. Brought to you by the Words, Beats, and Life nonprofit.
Hello. Hey, this is Roach. Can you hear me, Abel?
Can you hear me? Hello, I think it says that you're muted.
Okay. All right, how's that? Can you hear me in the kitchen?
Yeah, okay. I can hear you.
So we're on the phone. What I mentioned earlier, Abel, is that there's a lot of collateral consequences besides the fear and the apprehension of folks being afraid of being snatched out of their homes and their loved ones are sent to a foreign country. We notice there's some collateral consequences. One of them is that there's a high incidence of domestic violence, and a lot of these women who are afraid they might be deported, and they stand in unsafe environments to try to duck ICE with them and their kids. Is anything being done to able to help these women who are in these dangerous situations?
So unfortunately, that's a tragedy that we're seeing, because the system had set up a special visa for anyone that was experienced domestic violence. They could self-petition. Now that has ended really with this administration. Not only that, but because local police is also responding with ICE, what ends up happening is that particularly women are afraid to call just local police to report any domestic violence, because they are afraid that if they call police, they will be turned over to ICE and then deported back to a home country. And we have to remember that some of their children are American citizens, so the kids don't have to go back. It'll be the parent, and then the kids are left here by themselves. if families are not prepared. One of the things that we are working with families is to prepare. The best thing you can do when you're being attacked is to prepare for the worst case scenario. And that means that you are ensuring that you know what happens to your children, you know what happens to your assets, and that if you have to go back to the country of origin, you have a plan to insert yourself back into that home country and making sure that your kids can get to you, or if they're going to stay here, that you have made those type of arrangements. Again, this is a lot of work that immigrants have to do just to exist currently in the current situation, but it's done on purpose so that they will just give up and leave on their own. What we're trying to provide here at Carecen is really the ability to accompany them, to create all of these emergency plans, put them in place in case worst case scenario happens.
What emergency plan do you have for those men and women who are being snatched up? Do they have a safe number they can call? What happens to their kids when the kids are born here in America and they're naturalized citizens at birth and the parents are being taken out of the country? What happens to the kids?
Yeah, so one of the things that many municipalities have is called standby guardianship. And that is a form that you can complete to allow someone to give them the temporary custody of your children to make decisions. Again, you're not giving up your custody as a parent. All you're doing is providing a standby guardian that can make sure that that child is taken care of, that they can be picked up from school. And if in the end they have to reunite with their family in the country of origin, then that person has the ability to put them on a plane and send them back. Those are things that are in place. There are also powers that you can give people to manage your financial matters. If you own a home, if you have bank accounts, to make sure that you can access your assets, even if you're detained. People need to remember that if you are caught by ICE, your phone is taken away. You don't have the ability to call people when you want. And you have very limited access to speak to your family. So it's best to prepare before you get caught as an insurance policy to make sure that you know what's going to happen in the eventuality that you do get caught by ICE. So you know what happens to your children. You know who they're going to stay with. You know if they're going to stay here in the U.S. or they're going to be sent to you if you do get deported. And most importantly, people have access to your assets, someone that you would trust that can figure out what to do to sustain you financially. Because you have to remember, if you're the main earner in your family and you get caught, then you lose that money. And so basically, not only are you incarcerated, but you don't have the ability to make money to provide for your family. So you have to make all of these arrangements before you get arrested by ICE. And unfortunately, is the world that we live in at this moment.
What can somebody do if ICE, we read where the Supreme Court had ruled that this is legal, that they can profile you based on your look, your color, your language, your accent, and where you are. And this has been ruled unconstitutional, illegal, to do the profile. They was profiling black people back in the day. So now this is a 360 turn that they can profile you based on what you look like, your accent, the language you speak. And this is the Supreme Court just ruled on that a few months ago. And this is unbelievable that they can profile and discriminate and segregate folk and lock them based on the color of their skin or the language that they speak. What happens? What are your rights? If ICE run down on somebody right now, what would you tell them to do? How would they protect themselves if ICE run down on you right now?
Yes, unfortunately, we're in a very bad space. The best thing that you can do is to have someone record it so that there is a record of it. At this point, the state has all the power and the Supreme Court has deemed it legal, right? So now not only is the president, the executive branch, enforcing the law in a way that's unlawful, but the Supreme Court has said that it's okay. Right. So we're in very dark times at this moment. And what we have to tell, unfortunately, communities of color, once again, that they have to endure and they have to prepare and they have to survive, because, you know, there will be light at the end of this tunnel. And when that light comes, we must be ready to prosecute. But we can only do that if people record if they remember the names, if they write things down. But unfortunately, at this particular time, there's very little that we can do. Because even if ICE violates your rights, the courts deemed it that since you're deportable, it doesn't matter. That's where we're at right now in this nation. And so we must be careful. And again, it's not something new, particularly for communities of color. The African-American communities more than well enough know what this is. It is when the state uses all of its instruments to control you, right? To control your movements, to control your prospects of future earnings, right? And in this case, with immigrants, they can even kick you out of the country. That is the moment that we're living in at this time. But it is our time to plan. It is our time to continue to work and inform people, because knowledge and defense is what is going to keep people safe during this time.
You know, we read, well, if you're an undocumented, you have the right to remain silent and do not have to discuss your immigration or citizenship status with the police, immigration agents, for other officials. Anything you tell an officer can lead later be used against you in an immigration court. So if you're undocumented and you get caught, your best advice is don't say nothing until you get an attorney. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's still the right that we can still enforce ourselves, making sure that people utilize it. We also have rights against them searching our property, searching our person. But I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of ICE officers that don't care. There's a lot of ICE officers that are kicking in doors, that are breaking windows of cars. And they are not getting prosecuted. So at this moment, what we tell people is to know their rights, to enforce their rights, but to be clear that ICE is not going to necessarily, once you exert your rights, they're going to stop. They're going to continue putting pressure on you to say what they want you to say so that they can deport you. And so we need to tell people and prepare people that it's not a clean environment when ICE is upon you. They pressure you. Sometimes they put you in a room. They keep you for days and they try to intimidate you to do that. So even upholding your rights is becoming very difficult when you're so fearful of what's going to happen, that I think you have to be able to just remind people, we got to do this. We have to record, because we need to be ready when this storm passes and we can prosecute and hold people accountable.
There you go. It says that if an officer knocks on your door, do not open the door. Teach your children not to open the door. Officers must have a warrant signed by a judge to enter your home. ICE warrants are not signed by judges. They are ICE forms signed by ICE officers, and they do not grant authority to enter a home without consent of the occupants. Are you familiar with that? That you don't have to open the
Yes.
door to let them in?
That is correct. People do not have to open their door to their house if they don't have a warrant signed by a judge. We teach people that. We train people on that. We need to make sure that they know how to read a warrant, because they lied. Police officers have been deemed by the Supreme Court that they can lie, and they say that they have the authority, but they must have it in person. So if they can't show that, they can't come into your home. Having said that, we have many examples where people have used that and ICE still kicks in their door. But nonetheless, you should still exert your rights. You should still ask for a warrant. And if they don't even crack the door. We ask people, they should place their warrant on a window so that they can read. They can take a picture of it and send it to someone so that if they want to confirm. But you're right, they have to look for certain things, including the signature of a judge. And if that is not present, ICE does not have the authority to come in, although many are violating that. But still, those are the things that we need to keep track of to make sure that once this is over, we can hold officers accountable for their behavior.
Let me ask, are you getting support, or is the Latino community getting support from anybody in Congress, anybody that got authority or power to help stop and curtail this? Because the Supreme Court just gave them the green light to do whatever they wanted to do. So are there anybody in Congress who's supportive of what you're talking about to stop this illegal activity, no due process, locking up people, sending them all over the country? This is This is how they treat us back in Jim Crow days in slavery. They did whatever they want. They didn't have a warrant. They can come in your house, lock you up, beat you up, throw you away. And they're doing the same thing now to you. And Martin Luther King said something that I like to share. He said, if they come for your neighbor and you don't do nothing, one day they come in for you and there won't be nobody there to speak up for you. So when we see injustices, we need to stand up and speak up, because the next person could be you. So this is something that we've been pushing. It really hurts, man, to see this, because I grew up in this city and this town, and to see the law being violated, breaking car windows, smashing people, pulling them out of arms of their loved ones and their kids, and you see little kids crying because their dad and moms are being dragged away. This isn't the America that we grew up in. This is another whole different climate. And whatever we can do, Abel, on this show, on the station, please let us know and we'll get the word out, because this just ain't right. Let me ask you this. What happens when they deport most of these men and women? Do they go to prison? Where do they go? When they go to another country and they deported, they can't speak the language, they're not even familiar with none of the culture items in this particular country. How do they exist? You can't get a job. You can't speak the language.
So it's really complicated right now, because the courts have allowed the Trump administration to deport people to countries where they're not even from. So, like, Trump has made agreements with multiple nations in Africa and the Middle East and Latin America. So you can be from Mexico, but they can send you to Egypt. And what's going to happen if when they send you to another country, they're not letting you free in that country. You're going to go to a prison in that country, and that country will hold you because the U.S. is paying them. So that is what happened to the Venezuelans that got sent to El Salvador. They were held and tortured in a prison until they were released. Unfortunately, if you get deported and you're not sent to your country of origin, you will not be released on your own recognizance. What you will be do is put on detention and most likely in a jail in that country without any protections of your person. So I think it's very dangerous what we're living through right now. Again, this is meant to intimidate immigrants, to make sure that if they're given a choice, they'll just decide to go back to their country of origin. And you have to remember that a lot of these countries are still reeling from like structural economic situations where poverty exists. And the reason they left, because they couldn't live in those countries because of the violence. So they're going back to those nations. And so, again, we need to understand what's happening now, that their people are just getting sent back to their countries of origin without any due process. And there might be going to violent situations, because many people left those countries fleeing violence, fleeing poverty. And they're going back to the same conditions that they left from, that they ran from. Unfortunately, is what we're living through now. And, you know, as it relates to Congress, we hope that the midterm elections gives us some hope and the Democrats can put some brakes on what the Trump administration is doing. But we'll have to see. You know, we can't rely on our elected officials sometimes. What we can rely on is on ourselves and the relationships that we build across communities. So the African-American community and the Latino community, we need to come together and support each other. Because if we count on politicians, we're going to be waiting here too long for justice to get done. So I think that to the extent that we continue to work together, we continue to know each other's stories and support us as we're suffering, I think we will be stronger together. And so one of the things that I ask your audience is to just connect. Yes, we need to get the support from our elected officials. We need for them to do the fight. But we need to come together. We need to come with the solutions, and we need to start acting on those solutions.
What do you see? I know that it looks very dark right now. What do you see in the future? I know you are very hopeful. You're a positive-thinking individual. What do you see as somewhere out of this? Do you see a way out of this? Do you see this thing changing?
Yes. So the good thing is that sometimes they overreach. So I think that when we're seeing how ICE is operating, I think many people that even supported Trump are not liking what he's doing. You can see that in the polls. He is sinking fast because our economy is not working. Our law enforcement is not working, although he's promising all these wonderful things that are not happening. And so I think it gives us an opportunity to change the narrative of what, of who and what immigrants bring to this nation and how we strengthen it. And from there, hopefully we can get better policies in place. But I do think that, you know, one of the things that I have to say is that both the African-American community and the immigrants, they have suffered. They are people that are survivors, and we will survive this, just like we've survived so many awful things that have happened to us in this nation. And we continue to make this nation strong. So I think that I'm always hopeful that we will endure, and I see a future where we're going to have a better life.
This is WPFW Station ID Break. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
This is Medea Benjamin of Code Pink with the WPFW editorial. As Washington escalates towards confrontation with Venezuela, opinion polls show that in the United States and Venezuela, the majority oppose U.S. intervention. Yet instead of listening to the people, the Trump administration is charging ahead with escalation, labeling Venezuelan officials as terrorists, asserting the right to strike vessels in the Caribbean without evidence or congressional approval, tightening sanctions. This week, President Trump said something important, that he is willing to talk to President Nicolas Maduro. We hope so, but let's not be naive. The U.S. has used talks before as a cover for military action, including against Iran, engaging diplomatically one day while preparing strikes the next. So we have to ask, is this a sincere step towards peace or the prelude to something far more dangerous? The fundamental truth is that Venezuela is not our enemy, and war is not the answer. 28 million Venezuelans have already endured years of economic warfare through sanctions that block medicine, fuel, and basic goods. A U.S. military strike would only ignite an internal conflict and shatter countless lives. We've seen this story before: Iraq, Libya, Syria. So today, Code Pink calls on the White House to honor the will of the people and calls on Congress to rein in unauthorized military force and lift sanctions so Venezuelans can rebuild their own country in peace. For WPFW, I'm Medea Benjamin with Code Pink. You can learn more at codepink.org/Latin America.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate that. Thank you. Abel, we see a lot of things, a lot of shots on the news of ICE agents and breaking people's car windows and windshields and snagging them out of the car. What can be done if somebody, the ICE them, stop you in your car? What rights do you have in your vehicle to prevent them or stop them from breaking your glass and snatching you out of there?
So you know, I want to explain something. I think people don't understand the power that ICE has. So ICE, or remember, there are multiple law enforcement agencies within the immigration agencies. So ICE is one of them, and the other one is Border Patrol. Border Patrol, or known as CVP, are the ones that we're seeing on television with their tactics. They have a lot of authority 100 miles from every border in the U.S. That includes sea borders, means the Pacific and the Atlantic oceans, and land borders such as Canada and Mexico. And so that means that most of the urban centers are within 100 miles of any border in the U.S. So think about it as a ring around the U.S. 100 miles deep. Within that, they have incredible authority to do whatever they see fit. So if they suspect that you're an undocumented immigrant and you refuse to come out of your car, they do have the authority to break your window. That is anywhere within 100 miles of any border. So think about it. Washington, D.C. is within 100 miles of the Atlantic Ocean. New York borders the Atlantic Ocean. California, San Francisco, Houston, Chicago, all of those cities are within 100 miles of Border Patrol. And so within that, Border Patrol has an incredible authority to do that. So they're exercising that by profiling. And if they suspect that someone is an undocumented immigrant and they are refusing to get out of their car, they're using these rough tactics to do it. Now, should they do it? Do they have the authority to do it? Unfortunately, the courts have said that they do. And so in order for us to change this, we must change, Congress must not pass laws to be able to prevent them from doing that. We must also pass laws so that they can't cover their faces. Because right now, you see officers that you don't even know if they're ICE or CBP. You just know that they're covered, they're in camouflage and fatigues with their guns, and their badge and name are so little that you can barely read. And so we must make sure that Congress passes law to ensure that officers must identify themselves, cannot cover their faces unless they're doing, there has to be some emergency why they're doing it, or a reason why, not just because they think that looks tough, because they think that's what they're doing. They're using all these tactics to really scare people. But unfortunately, at this moment, they do have that authority to break your window if they feel, if they have probable cause to think that you are in violation of immigration law. And unfortunately, probable cause is something that they have a lot of latitude to exercise when they are in front of you, when they're in front of our community, in front of our vehicles. So yes, to answer your questions, unfortunately, they're at this moment, they have the authority to break your window.
Let me make a question. If they break your car window or your windshield or break the door on your house, are they required to pay for them damages? Can you get reimbursed for the damage they do to your vehicle, to your house?
Yes, it's not automatic. Remember that a lot of law enforcement, they have a lot of liability doesn't land on them. They're protected by other laws. And so unfortunately, you would have to sue as an individual, sue the ICE to get that money back. But unfortunately, in most cases, that will take years before you see any money, and most people just give up and then just, you know, pay it out of pocket.
You know, this is frustrating. I've been in this town my whole life, 70, 80 years, and I've been through Jim Crow, the segregation, all this kind of stuff, man. And what we're seeing now is just as worse as it was back in the 40s and the 50s when I came through, because we didn't have rights. There was no rights in terms, they could come in your house, they could lock it down, they didn't have no warrant, they could lock us up based on the color of our skin. And you see movies and stuff like this where guys get life 40, 50, 60 years just because of the color of their skin. And we thought all this stuff was over, the Supreme Court ruled on a couple of cases. Now the Supreme Court, who used to be somewhat our friend or somewhat respective of people's basic human rights, is no longer doing that. So the court that we went to for final approval or rectify all this bull crap is no longer doing that. So we're left, you are left, all of us are left with no protection. We just read that the ICE has got a $39 billion budget. It's higher than the FBI. And they're giving guys $50,000 sign-in bonuses to join ICE. And this whole problem, this whole situation is like, it's cowboys. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want, to whomever they want, and we have no recourse to do nothing. What do you say to this? For people listening, if you want to call in, the number to call is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We'd like to hear from some of you who are going through some of this torturous, crazy behavior that's being, they're just taking America back to the dark ages, man.
Well, I'm glad, you know, I think it's important for us to understand that the work of justice is never done. Just because we, you know, there was a lot of work done by the African-American community in the 50s and the 60s to rectify the injustices that have happened in the past, it doesn't mean that we can never stop fighting. This is a perfect example of how it can be taken away from us that quickly. And so, you know, I think what you said is correct. You fought this in the 50s and the 60s. You remember a time when police would go into your homes. And even though you had rights, they didn't care. They just went in anyway, and there were no repercussions for that behavior. Now, we, I think, as a community came together in the 60s, it was an incredible civil rights movement, and we had heroes like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King that were pushing and pushed and got change. But to think that that change was permanent, I think it's a mistake on our end. We need to make sure that we got to continue fighting every day to make sure that those protections continue, because we can see how easily and how fragile they are. You get a couple of administrations that weaken the Supreme Court, a couple of picks of justices, and everything falls. And we're seeing that. I think we're at a time that we can still come together and fight back and make sure that we put whatever was taken away back. So we have to repair the damage that has been done and then continue to fight, because we were never, never in the place where we needed to be. We were never, you know, like black and brown people were never equal in this country. We had to fight and struggle. And now we're even pushed back. So I think that the lesson here is that we can never stop fighting. We must always work towards justice, because only, you know, only because we have reached a certain milestone does not mean we're in the promised land. Never, and we should never fall for that again, you know. And people like Martin Luther King said that, you know, that this was a fight, that he wasn't going to be here with us all the way, but that the fight must continue. And we must take those words to heart and continue that fight forward.
Man, you know, this is very refreshing to hear you speak, Abel. You're very knowledgeable and informed what's going on. And I can feel your passion. And I can feel the little kids' passion. I look at TV and I see these little kids crying, and they snatch their fathers out in the mother's arms in the court building and drag the mom down the floor. And the kids are seeing this. Don't they realize that this is making some vivid impressions on these young minds? Like this case in with the gentleman who killed, who shot the two National Guard soldiers. This guy was from Afghanistan, and he came over, and he caught hell. He couldn't get a job, couldn't get a place to stay. And folks can't live when you're treating them subserviently, when you treat them like dogs or whatever. And somebody's going to strike out. And a lot of these little kids who are watching their moms and daddies and brothers and sisters being smashed, these are indelible images on these little kids' minds. And you never, there's no telling what they're going to do or might do. You're creating warriors. You're creating warriors by doing this. It ain't what you're doing. It's how you're doing it. This is disrespectful. It's insulting. It's humiliating. And it's destroying families. And on the Statue of Liberty, there's a saying, give me your tired, your hungry, and your poor. That's why people come to America. This is the Super Bowl of all the countries. You got rights and stuff that you don't get in other countries. So everybody want to be on a winner or be it where they can have a better tomorrow for their kids. But now, we don't even have a better today. We have few people who can't eat. And when you said about when they locked up the father who's a breadwinner, the mother and the 2-3 kids don't have no money coming in. So now they're destitute. Now they can't go and apply for SNAP. They cut the SNAP program out for aliens or migrants. So you're creating a situation where folk is going to have to do something. And I don't want to say this, but the crime rate is going to take off. I believe the crime rate will take off, man. And I don't want to see it. I hope it doesn't happen, but we need to, as Martin Luther King said, if they came for you tonight and they come for my next neighbor in the morning, tomorrow night they're coming for you. So people, we need to take a stand to let folks know that this isn't the America that we know. And we want to make sure that our America stays as it is. Do we get have any calls?
I don't think
nobody that. Called in? All right, we got a few more minutes, Abe. What is it you want to say, Abe, to your community that they can do to help counter and fight some of this?
So at this moment, the best thing they can do is to prepare yourself. So we ask all the families to really start thinking about their own situation, about what they need to do for worst-case scenario. And so that means that they know what's going to happen with their kids, that they've talked to their family members, to their friends, to their colleagues, and they know if they need to leave their kids with someone, they know who that is, and they have done the paperwork around it. If they have assets like houses and bank accounts, they have thought about who they trust to be someone that has authority over that, so that they can use some of those funds to for mitigation, you know, for legal fees, for tickets to the country of origin, things of that nature, and to make sure that they have gotten immigration consultation, so that they know what actually is gonna happen to them if they do get caught. You know, what are their options? I think being prepared is the best thing that you can do right now. As we continue to build alliances, as we continue to build political power to fight in a brighter day. We know that right now we don't have the numbers. Right now, the Trump administration controls both Congress and the judiciary, the Supreme Court. So until that changes, we need to play defense. And that defense is about ensuring our survival, our sustainability, to know that we're going to be standing here in 2 years when we're in a better position to fight back and rebuild. And so I ask all of our community members to seek out professionals, organizations like mine, like Carecen, and others that provide these type of services to make sure that you're ready. Come what may come, be prepared. It's an insurance policy. And if you never have to use it, that is great. But if worst case scenario happens, then you're prepared. Just like you have insurance for your house when there's a fire or a flood, you don't want a fire or a flood. But if it does happen, you want to make sure that you're prepared.
Question. We got one caller. We take that first caller. Come on. You're on air. Question or comment, please.
Hello. Good day, Roach.
Hey.
This is Rick calling from Germany.
Hey, man, how you doing? We've been concerned about you, man. How's your health?
Struggling to eat, struggling to get up and work, and not able to do much of anything in the house. But I wanted to ask Brother Nunes why so many Latino Hispanics voted for Trump knowing that he was a racist.
Go ahead, Abel.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I think that, one, you have to remember that Latinos come from a place that was colonized by the same white supremacy that this country was colonized. We were colonized by Europeans, and some of those sins continue to live and are internalized. And so once we immigrate to the U.S., we bring all that baggage with us, the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? So we're not perfect people. I think that the other important thing is that you had a Democratic Party that has not delivered on any of their promises, that life continues to get harder for people, and they thought that they believe that this guy was going to solve it because he was a businessman, he was a con man. And people bought it. But if you look at the polling right now, people are having buyer's remorse. Now, having said that, a lot of people were saying that he was a bad guy to begin with. But people were so frustrated with our political system that they're looking for any change, even if it's change that is not good for them. And it's unfortunate. I think that this is a perfect lesson that we need to hold not only people like Trump accountable, but people that we support, that we elect to Congress and do nothing for poor communities, do nothing for black and brown people, do nothing to ensure that we have a better life. Because if that continues to happen, then it's irrelevant of who we vote for. We vote for who we like because we saw them on television, as opposed to who is best for us.
Yeah. You know, we got a couple of minutes to go. I'd like for you, Abel Nunes, to speak to our audience and explain what they can do and give some contact information on you if they want to get involved. Because I think it's over 59 million Latinos in America, over 59 to 75 million. Something got to be done with that kind of numbers all over this country. We got to organize and get together. So can you speak to our audience and explain, here's what we're going to do, here's what we're trying to do, and we'd like for you to participate and give them some contact information.
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the most important things is to really control the narrative. You know, one of the things that Trump was able to do is that after he got out of office last time, he really changed the narrative. He really changed what people thought about immigrants. From, you know, immigrants, I think historically were like, they're great for America, even if they came here undocumented. We need to fix that, but they're good. What Trump basically changed the narrative to was like, they're evil, they're hurting our country. And I think that that's so important. We need to really know our stories. One of the best things that we can do is to understand our own communities. So much of our Black and brown people are so traumatized. You know, they carry so much pain that sometimes it's hard to hear someone else's pain when you yourself are in pain. So I think narrative is important.
Okay, we got one last caller. We'll take the one last caller. Come on, you're on the air. Question or comment?
Hi, how are you today? How's it going?
Okay.
Good, good. So I want to talk about what we just heard from the co-host and how he said that they were colonized by the same colonizers that we were. Yeah, but we abdicated. We capitulated. We turned around. We didn't follow the colonizer, at least a majority of us. You still got the Clarence Thomases. But I believe it's because the Hispanics thought that they were white. I mean, let's just face it, right? They thought that they had the European, and it's all about the aesthetics. It's the look. It's the straight hair. It's a lighter complexion. It's what's going on Hispanola with the Dominicans and the Haitians. You have it right there. That's a microcosm of the macrocosm of what we see in the Western Hemisphere and other parts of the world. So I don't believe it's about, they definitely have buyer's remorse, but they didn't do it because they brought baggage. No, they brought that identity crisis that they don't know who they are. They don't know Boricua. They don't know the Aztec, the home Olmec. They don't understand their native history, and they sold out, and they're going to pay a huge price for thinking that they were white by assimilating to the white race. You cannot do that. You're not them. You can't act like them. You can't be like them. I raised my children to say, you might be light and all that, but you ain't white.
Thank you for your comments. That was some interesting comments. We got our time is up. We want to thank Abel Nunes from Cassin, D.C. You gave a very enlightened presentation, sir, to inform our audience. We want to thank you. We would like to have you back again. And this situation with you, it's going to affect us, too, because like we said, if you come from a neighbor, I didn't do nothing. In the morning, they're coming from us. And people, we already been through this, and now the Spanish, and they ain't got no cover on it.
How can we reach out to him?
So our time is up. He gave you some information on how to contact him. If you don't have it, you can contact us, and we'll connect you with Mr. Abel Nunes. I want to thank you. Thank you to Keisha. We're getting ready for our second hour. We're coming to you live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl on 10th and H Street Northeast. We're waiting for the original Ben to get repaired. It's taking a little longer than we anticipated. But we still come to you the first Tuesday of month live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl. Thank you, Mr. Abel Nunes. We'll be calling you again, sir. Thank you, Nikita.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank our listeners for calling in, and we appreciate you. Thank you. This is Stay Tuned for the next hour of Crossroads.
WPFW Local Station Board is hosting a community town hall on Saturday, December 13th, from 12 noon until 3 p.m. Our theme is Free Airwaves, Fighting for Community and Public Radio. With the economic upheaval caused by DOGE, the social stress exacerbated by the military occupation of the capital, and the harm inflicted on innocent people by ICE agents, it is more important than ever to have an independent grassroots media focused on building communities, amplifying marginalized voices, and driving social movements. The town hall takes place on Saturday, December 13th, from 12 noon until 3 p.m. at the Brookland Busboys and Poets, 625 Monroe Street, Northeast in the district. Additional information can be found online at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building community one broadcast at a time.
This Giving Tuesday, we are asking you once again to stand with WPFW. Your support this past year helped keep independent music, progressive voices, and community journalism on the air at a time when it matters more than ever. WPFW is member supported. There are no corporate owners here, no partnership with any university, just you, the people, making this station possible. If WPFW informs you, uplifts you, or accompanies you throughout your day, please consider making a gift right now. Every contribution, large or small, helps sustain this vital community resource. Support WPFW this Giving Tuesday. Visit WPFWFM.org and give today.
Y'all. I am Jaren with Dreaming Out Loud.
And I'm Ron Motu with the Go-Go Museum and Cafe. This holiday season, Historic Anacostia is bringing joy from December the 11th through the 22nd.
A celebration filled with daily surprises along Marion Barry and MLK Jr. Avenue Southeast. Christmas tree lighting, live concerts at the Go-Go Museum, and holiday meals and deals from your favorite Anacostia businesses.
12 days of festive family fun as you dine, shop, and explore DC's Arts and Culture District. Powered by the Anacostia Bid, artagogo.org. For more information.
On Monday, December 8th, WPFW presents Saving Our Homes, the Crisis in Housing and Homeownership, in partnership with the Washington Informer and the Missionary Baptist Minister Conference of the DMV. From 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., we confront gentrification, predatory buyers, tax sales, foreclosure traps, and the loss of family homes, defending our elders and keeping generational wealth in our families. The programming continues at 5 p.m. where we'll unpack the lack of affordable housing and the displacement of renters. We culminate in a town hall from 6 to 8 p.m. moderated by Donald Temple and Denise Rolock Barnes, where we welcome listeners' calls. Guests include lawyers, activists, pastors, financial strategists, and government officials. That's Saving Our Homes, the Crisis in Housing and Home Ownership, December 8th on WPFW, building a more equitable world, one broadcast at a time.
Inviting all DC hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers, the Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
If you're a dancer or just a fan, the Way You Move Festival is coming to Washington, D.C. with jams, competitions, and classes. December 13th through the 16th. Whether you're into hip-hop, house, breaking, popping, or locking, we've got you covered with top-notch Small Fries Edition, all-styles dance jam and competition for youth ages 17 and under on the 13th at Edgewood Arts Center. Freshest of all time, 2-verse-2 breaking battle, ages 18 and up, also on the 13th at the Black Cat. The world-famous Juice DeBoo 2-verse-2 competition, DC prelims, on the 14th at The Reach. And masterclasses with international Juice DeBoo judges on the 15th and 16th.
all in Washington, D.C., all family-friendly, December 13th through 16th. Additional event and registration information at wblinc.org/thewayyoumove. Brought to you by the Words, Beats, and Life nonprofit.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another.